The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. Another beautiful day here on the beautiful healing vortex of Vashon Island, Washington. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining us today. Got a lot to talk about today. I've got a wonderful guest to share with you today that's going to be letting you know a little bit about her experience, strength, and hope. As you well know, we are called Adventures in Recovery. And when I say recovery, well, you know what? That means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And in just a couple of minutes, you are going to hear from our guest about what her story is. Ladies and gentlemen, in just a minute, we're going to be having Carrie joining us. We picked a little bit of hip hop to bring you on today because you're kind of a hip hop kind of gal. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Carrie has a really fascinating story, and she too is a product of recovery. And you want to start from the beginning of what we say as what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now.
Yeah, this is so interesting to be doing this. And I'm so glad to have gotten to meet you. So I'll just start off how I would at a recovery meeting. My name is Carrie. I didn't start off talking about recovery. I started off as a little kid in New Jersey and came from a small family. There was my mom, my dad, my brother, my younger brother, and I. And my young life was pretty rough. My dad was an addict, and my mom was also really codependent. There's levels to this that I didn't know until, you know, getting into recovery myself and processing a lot of things. But I do know that I knew too much as a kid. My mom leaned on me a lot. And so what I wanted to do is protect my younger brother, keep my mom happy, and be a good enough kid to get my dad to come back and stop doing drugs. And so little five-year-old Carrie was just convinced that if I was just like the best kid that I could ever be, then my dad would come back, right, and make the family complete. I was convinced that he didn't love us or me enough to stop doing drugs. And of course, that wasn't helped by the conversations I would have with my mom about, you know, he just doesn't love us enough to stop. And so that was in my head from a little kid. And it stuck with me for a really long time. But what it did was save me from a lot of mischief as a kid. I just knew that I didn't want to be him, and I just wanted to be the best kid. So I was a super overachiever. One of my first escapes was reading books, school. I loved teachers paying attention to me, getting good grades. We were also very religious. I thought I was going to be like a nun growing up, because I was like, well, who's somebody that everybody in the community likes? Is
an overachieving nun.
An overachieving, super smart nun. Perfect. So everybody would like me. And maybe that would be enough to make dad proud and come back home, right? Gosh, like that, yeah. All of it was just rolled into one. And about the religious thing, like that played into a big part of how I lived my life too. I just, you know, like believed everything, and so I just really, really wanted to play everything by the book. And what happened was, I was a super, super good kid. I was a valedictorian in grade school. I get into high school. I'm still really good. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school.
I can relate to that. Yep. All-boys Catholic high school right here.
So it makes perfect sense when you hear the rest of my story and see how I turned out. But, you know, by the time I hit junior year, I was like, nothing has changed. I have played it safe this entire time. I've done everything that everybody's asked me to do, especially God in my mind. And Dad's not back yet. And so I saw the rest of my friends having what I thought was fun and starting to drink and party and go out and also meet boys, which was, they were a total mystery to me. Mm-hmm. So by the time I hit my junior year, I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. And so I grew up in New Jersey, and my town, I could see New York from my town. So I started sneaking into the city, and this is back in the early 2000s.
Ooh.
So it's like, as the city's getting cleaned up, but still New York City for 16 and 17 year old girls. Like
back when it was fun.
Back when it was fun. I'm old enough that it was pre-cell phone days. So we would sneak in, but like I would be at my friend's house, they would be at my house, and really we would all be in New York City.
Oh.
And nobody would know where we were. So
makes
I was doing
total sense to me.
Really dangerous things, you know. I didn't know. It was all in the name of fun, and I was finally a cool kid, and I had something that was secret that I could keep to myself and have a little edge to me.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I've been a blackout drinker since day one, and whenever I drink the way I want to drink, I end up blacking out. And so there's consequences to things, right? There were big consequences that I didn't know how to talk about. My family is one of those families that we don't talk about things.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
We know that bad things are happening, but there's no sense in dwelling on it. So you just, number one, never talk about it outside of the home. And also, we don't have words for feelings. And so I just couldn't ever talk about what I was going through. But also, I had found some freedom. I didn't want that snatched from me. So
well,
I just...
And plus that, growing up and going to a parochial school, you had an image, and the image was very important
very
back then.
Very important.
Not only in your church community, but in your school community.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally relate to the fact that you would escape from that environment to the big, dirty, nasty, fun city of New York, where you could be anonymous, and maybe you never intended to get blackout drunk, but that is the insanity of the disease, mm-hmm. is we never intended for that to happen, but once that first drink gets in our system, we lose control.
I never know where I'm going to end up. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, but it's part of it. And it was part of that double life I was living, because I was still the goody-goody back at home and still going to the choir and church and doing all the good things, but I got to have this other life I was living that was just mine. And I also just learned, you know, how to trade things. And so I got to, I was still really smart. I got to go to college and I went to a big, big party school, and I wanted to be a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. So I was in the ag dorms with all the farm kids, and I'm the city kid from New Jersey who now goes with all the farmer kids who, like, I had never seen a cow before. I had never seen a farm. I had never heard country music, but you know, these farm kids, they liked to drink, and I liked to drink, and I was now 9 hours away from mom. And so the party was off and bumping right from the start. And mm-hmm. again, the blackout drinking, there's consequences to being, you know, a freshman girl on college campus. And so there was more stuff that happened, and I certainly could not talk to mom about it. And what I know now, right, is I had finally found that freedom. I found people that I fit in with, and I found my alcohol that I didn't know how much I needed at that point. And so I couldn't really tell mom, because what if she took me out of college and made me go back home?
Oh, God.
Then my party would be over.
Yep.
So even though there were things that were happening, my drug of choice, my drink, still came first. So I didn't know how sick I was even at 17, 18 years old. And things didn't really get better. I mean, I graduated barely, but I certainly did not go on to become a veterinarian. I graduated undergrad and stayed in Columbus and just went to the next party scene. And I never leveled up. I always kept with whoever would drink as much at whatever time of the day as they could. That was the people that resonated with me.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's who you relate to.
That's who I relate to.
I mean, when you go out drinking, you don't mess around.
I get after it.
And that's the kind of people you want to be with.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to judge you.
There's no judgment. Yeah. In the rooms of recovery, they talk about becoming lesser company. And I certainly became the lesser company at the end. And I just didn't know it, because to me, my alcoholism was slow at first and then all at once. Like, it was a slow roll, of course, where there were things that happened. But there was still a lot of fun in the beginning, even though there was consequences. There was still things that I could paint as being really pretty and having a really good time and still getting attention.
Well, yeah, and even the consequences, when we're among those kind of peers, the consequences were always justified and rationalized by, it's okay, I was really drunk.
Yeah.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah. I didn't know other people weren't blacking out. I didn't know that not everybody blacked out. But, you know, I had a handful of arrests by the time I leave Ohio. I was in Ohio for 8 years, and I went from being this goody-goody to having a minor in possession. I had my first DUI in Ohio, and I was going to be a nun, And so the juxtaposition is just so insane when I look back, because I just see the justification that occurs, when I'm in the middle of it. When I drink like I want to drink, the consequences don't ever outweigh my obsession to drink.
Isn't that the story?
That's
and you know
story.
What, folks, when we come back, you're going to hear what happened. We are talking with my guest today, the lovely and talented Carrie Costin, who hails from King County, Washington, currently. And she's shared with us what her life was like back in the day. And now we're going into phase two on when you hit that crossroads. What was that all about, Carrie?
All of a sudden, like the consequences or really the feelings catching up to me, it didn't get better, right? I graduated, I continued drinking and leveling down, really, as it were. And at the end, I had had a couple of runs of being unhoused. I had moved down to San Francisco and made the most money I'd ever made on paper and thought everything was made. The universe was finally looking out for me again. And
How old were you then?
I was still in my 20s, like 26.
Okay, prime picking.
28, yeah. No, actually, no, it was probably like 28. So okay. Still, not quite 30 yet. But, I moved down there making all this money and thinking I was hot stuff. And, like, finally, the universe was going to treat me better. And within 16 months, I was homeless. So I ended up moving back up to Washington. I'd been here for a short time before. I came back up to Washington and everything followed. I had gotten into more legal trouble here. I had gotten a big thing happened that I was like, again, I'm this good little Catholic, ex-Catholic girl. This stuff isn't supposed to be happening to me. What's going on? But it wasn't the legal repercussions that were catching up to me. What was happening was I was drinking more and more, and I still was unable to get rid of the feelings that I was always trying to run away from. During the time that I left out, my mom had passed when I was a junior in high school, and she was my best friend. We're now at COVID, so 2020. My younger brother passed away in November of 2020, and then I got reacquainted with my father, who was back in Brooklyn still, after my brother passed, and we were talking and talking, but I was very, very sick. I'm a morning drinker. Again, all of these feelings are coming out that I have no idea what to do with, and I'm drinking a handle of vodka a day, like half gallon of vodka a day, just being really mean to my dad, and then he passed away in May of 2021. So I have all of these things happening on top of legal consequences that are happening, and I don't know what to do about it. I have not had any sort of like emotional help, no idea what to do that's constructive to help me heal with these feelings. So finally, it's September of 2021. I get my second DUI. I spent 3 days up in Seattle for that. That wasn't the end of it. Thanksgiving of 2021 really was the beginning of my end. Because it was the darkest weekend of my life. The night before Thanksgiving of 2021, I was planning on having dinner. We were going to make dinner. My upstairs neighbor and I were going to make dinner, but we got drunk. And I'll blame it on her. We got into a fight, and I'll say it's her fight because I don't remember. I'm a blackout drunk.
Oh,
so,
that's right.
Yeah, so Thanksgiving morning, and I hope I never forget this feeling. Thanksgiving morning, I wake up, And I'm on Facebook giving away all of my turkey, my pie, my Cool Whip, all of the things Thanksgiving, because I can't have Thanksgiving dinner with my neighbor now because we're fighting. It's her fault. But I had three handles of vodka, and I just I vividly and viscerally remember thinking, this is all I need. And so from Thursday to Monday, I was on this rolling blackout where I was drinking, chain smoking, crying, and passing out, coming to just on repeat. And I got spat out at work on Monday. What? And I just was like, I was the emptiest I had ever been. It was the loneliest, darkest place I'd ever been. So then we're coming up to Christmas, not shortly after that. And December 20th, 2021, I was sitting on my couch doing the same thing I did every single day, which was drink my handle out of my shot glass, one shot at a time. And I had this epiphany where I, in my head, and I'm okay with saying woo-woo things now, I think it was divine intervention and my family coming through and saying, look at yourself and look at what is happening to you. Yeah. Look at what you've become. Because between my sectional couch and my coffee table was this moat of used Kleenexes, because all I could have like my first 6 to 10 shots. That's a normal amount for me. But after that, I'd just be crying, and I just had, you know, all my tissues around, and I had my cigarette butts on my sliding door in the patio right outside. And I could see the wreckage that had become my life. And I was, it just became so clear to me that I wasn't going to make it. I was going to die on that couch over the holidays. And I didn't know who was going to find me, because my family's all gone. I've drank everybody else out of my life. It's COVID, so nobody's coming over. But nobody wanted to come over at that point. Nobody wanted to be around me, and I didn't want anybody to be around me either. But I had this gut-wrenching thought of, I don't know who would find me and how long it would take. And I did not want that to be my fate. Like, I think I had that intervention of like, is this what you really want to leave as your legacy? And honestly, I think it was still pride, because it wasn't necessarily fear of dying. It was a fear of my mask finally being like totally ripped off, because whoever would find me would see how I've been living. So even though I was working at that time and was housed, I had still had this mask. I had this double life I was living from back when I was 17, right? I could still show up to work, and then I come home and I do this by myself, and people were going to find out what I would have been doing by myself and how sick I really was.
Oh, my God. So, just to sum it up, the false belief system that we were living under.
Yeah.
It was all lies.
It was all a lie. I was far sicker than I knew, and I'm just so grateful for that. So that night, I started calling around. I didn't know anything about recovery. I didn't know anything about treatment, but I knew that I couldn't stop on my own. So I just called a bunch of numbers, and the place I ended up going was out of state. And I wasn't an alcoholic when I checked in, but a lot of things started happening from the moment I walked through those doors.
Okay, now it's funny. You say you were not an alcoholic.
I was not an alcoholic.
When you got there, that was yet another false belief system. And but yet, you're putting away a couple handles of vodka every day.
Putting away only one handle of vodka, like a lady.
Oh,
one
very
handle
very
of
nice.
Vodka.
Yes.
And I wasn't an alcoholic. What I believed entirely was that I had PTSD and trauma, and I was depressed and had anxiety, and that's the only reason I was drinking that much. I wasn't an alcoholic. I was just self-medicating, which, to some extent, I was.
Well, here's the deal. And a lot of people that have substance issues have a lot of those symptoms, and quite frankly would qualify for a diagnosis of PTSD or severe anxiety issues or depression or bipolar or what have you. And you're right, that's the only way you know how to medicate, unless you're on a prescribed medications regime.
Right. So when I walked through the doors of treatment, though, it was Christmas Day, because I had called on the 20th. They wanted me to come in on the 21st, and I was like, I can't go. So they said, your next day's Christmas, and I thought that was absolutely perfect, because that's what I was hiding from, right? The feelings that were going to come up for Christmas, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and my mom's D-Day when she passed was January 7th. So I was like, I'm happy to be away and not be by myself, because I'm so dangerous. I knew that I was.
Yeah.
But anyway, so when I walked through the door, I had this notion of, I'm just like my dad. And it wasn't a mean thing. It was, oh my gosh, he was sick too. I'm sick. I think I got the same thing he had. So that started this healing process of not hating him so much, just a little bit, and maybe me thinking, I am sick. So opening the door to hearing some things when I was there, because I still wasn't an alcoholic yet. What happened? happened was within my first week, there was a guy there, and I forget his name, but I hope I never forget him, because he's who set me on this path to recovery. He was like this guy in his 40s, looked like a well-to-do, like, white guy who had some teenage kids at home. And again, I'm here over the holidays, and I'm like, why is this guy here? I know why I'm here. I have nothing left. Why is this guy who looks like he's got a family that loves him and a life to live at home and some money to enjoy? Like, why are you here? And he said, I had 14 years of recovery. Life got really good. I got away from my recovery meetings, and I relapsed, and I'm here now. And that did it for me, because I was only going to be there for 22 days and go back and drink a pint of vodka. A pint of vodka is a totally normal amount of vodka to drink, you know, less lethal than a handle. But that guy with his 14 years there over the holidays is who got me to really take a minute and listen.
Is it funny how the message is carried to us by people we could never have choreographed or set up ahead of time? It's like, bam. Listen, pay attention.
Absolutely.
He's here right now.
Because he never would have been in any of the places I was drinking. I was a dive bar drinker. That guy was not a dive bar guy, but he was in treatment over the holidays when I was in treatment, you know?
So now you're in treatment.
I'm in treatment, and I'm...
And, well, you're in treatment, and you finally accepted the fact that you are an alcoholic, you do need help, you've moved into having some compassion for your dad instead of resentment, because you're just like him.
I'm just like him.
And how long, and did you complete a treatment?
I completed my first 20-some days, and then I went back for a PHP with housing, but I had found a treatment boyfriend, because, you know, we can have lots of things that we're working towards. I always needed that validation, so we were asked to no longer stay, just shy of our 60 days.
Oh my gosh!
But you know what happened, though? That treatment center had put the fear of drunk into me. I was convinced that I was an alcoholic at that point. I knew that I had been to some recovery meetings, and I had understood and listened. It had resonated with some of the people had shared. It wasn't just me alone in my feelings. People had gone through and lived and survived some really rough things too, and they were clean and sober through it. So when I was asked to no longer stay my treatment, I was toured with the idea of either staying in Florida or coming back to Washington. And I was like, well, I'm going to go back, and I'm just going to do this recovery thing. I know that I can't sit on my couch by myself, because I never wanted to feel those feelings I had felt from December 20th again. I didn't want to feel that pit of despair. So when I got home, I dove into recovery. I like to say that I was more afraid of me than people in the rooms, which was absolutely true. Sitting by myself was still scary.
Oh, I can understand that. And you know what? Carrie is sharing exactly what her life has been like. And when we come back in just a minute, we're going to hear about what life is like now for her in recovery. Thanks so much, Carrie. We'll be right back.
I started sharing. I started being around people again. And even in spite of myself, you know, I would, like, after some of the meetings, they would ask me out to dinner. And I was like, I don't want anything to do with you guys. I'm only here just so I don't die on my couch. So my first time I went to dinner with people was literally just to shut them up. And I went to dinner once, and it was actually great. And it was more time I was away from myself and my scary thoughts. And so I wasn't so bad, and I kept going. There are recovery tools I've learned. I've gotten to work with a sponsor now. I've been in the program now for 4 years. I celebrated 4 years on December 25th. It's super, super cool. I have a life that I only really dreamt of before when I was sitting on my couch looking out at the rest of the world. Like, I am part of the world today. I've gotten to heal so much, like one-on-one with another woman at first, talking about all my stuff, and I still meet with that sponsor, you know. But now I get to also walk other women through the same thing and just heal together. So I no longer have like this dark cloud of the universe is against me. I have a relationship with a higher power now. I have common ground with other people to where I don't hate the world anymore. And I can leave my house and not be riddled with anxiety. I leave my house and do really fun things today. How it started for me with traveling was not only locally here in Washington when I got my license back. I got the breathalyzer out of my car. I started driving around here in Washington. But then I got to do some recovery trips. I got to go back down to San Francisco when I was about a year and a half, 2 years sober, and rewrite some of the memories down in the bay that I had that were drunken memories from before. I got to redo that sober. Then the next year I got to go to Anchorage. This past year I just came back from Hawaii. And the coolest thing that's happening right now is I'm leaving for Ireland on Sunday. And this is a recovery thing all wrapped up into my birthday because I turn 40 on the 19th. And it's just incredible because if it had been up to Carrie's Design for Living, I would have been dead about 5 years ago. You know, and now I get to, not only do I get to celebrate a 40th birthday, but I get to be in Ireland, which is someplace I've always wanted to go. I shared about this experience, about what I was planning on doing at some of these recovery meetings, and other people said that they wanted to come. So now there's six of us rolling out to Ireland this week. And what an incredible thing that I don't even have to be alone even in vacation anymore, where before I was so utterly alone and isolated that nobody wanted to be around me, and I couldn't stand to be around anybody else. Today, I book a trip because I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this recovery thing and just go on my own. Then I share about it at a meeting, and now six of us are going, right? Like, I never have to be alone again.
Well, not only that, but the magic that happens once somebody sets the intention of wanting a better life, letting go of a substance issue, I tell people, be prepared for the magic, because you're going to have a spiritual awakening. I'm not necessarily talking about a religious awakening. I'm talking about a spiritual awakening. Be prepared for some of the things that are going to happen and come your way. Working as a drug and alcohol counselor at Bastion Youth and Family Services, I get to see the magic happen in people. When they come in and they start working a program, things just seem to start happening. It's like, well, for instance, my introduction to you, Carrie, was just by happenstance. I mean, I meet you in recovery. A huge part of that is being in gratitude. Gratitude for what we have today and gratitude that we don't have to do what we used to do. I met a gratitude banquet, and a mutual friend of ours introduces me to Carrie. And this was in November, right? Gratitude Month.
Yeah.
And here we are. You're a guest on my show. In fact, you work in the field of recovery now today, don't you?
Yes, it's amazing. In a couple different facets. I get to give back because a lot was given to me, right? I have a debt that I owe. But I get to meet some amazing people along the way, even just having fun, and now we can work together, you know, on so many different levels.
And that's why we call this show Adventures in Recovery. Your life has become an adventure. You're heading off to Ireland very shortly. Myself, I start my vacation tomorrow, flying over to Barcelona to sail on a ship over to Florida. And, you know, I could never do any of the stuff that I was using. Number one, I would have had the money then. Number two, I would have had the discipline to even make it on a plane, probably, because I'd still be sitting in the bar at the airport, milking another drink. And probably missing the flight.
I missed so many flights at the airport. For work, on work trips, I would miss my flight at the airport.
Wow.
And then flying at midnight, catch the next flight.
And we're not talking about her work today.
No.
her work and her past life. God, it's been a, you know, I love the bumper sticker from Grateful Dead, which says a long, strange trip it's been, which is totally the case. And, you know, life is what it is today, but we have the power to make positive changes in our lives, and I don't want people to ever forget that they have that ability. All they have to do is make a choice and accept some of the support that's offered to you on a regular basis. So Carrie Costin, thank you for being with us today on Adventures in Recovery. Will you come back again?
Absolutely. This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
You're amazing. And you have a miraculous story. And everybody can have a story like that. Just, you know, hop aboard. We're waiting for you, and we're going to welcome you with open arms. And just a brief shout-out to our movie series that is funded by Vashon Youth and Family Services and King County is coming back to the Vashon Theater, and it's going to be April 14th. You know the story. It's called Adventures with Movies and Emotions, and get to the theater early. Movie starts at 5:30 p.m., and collect your free popcorn, free candy, free sodas, enjoy the movie. And afterwards, we're going to follow it up and end with free pizza and a discussion led by our Vashon Youth and Family Services counselor. Thank you so much for tuning in today, folks. I look forward to being with you again next week, where we hear from a high schooler talking about what the kids are listening to nowadays.